Welcome back, footy fans, to another episode of Donnie's Disposals. I'm your host, Coach Donnie Hessier, back with another AFL round review. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the coolest rounds of the year has just come. It is one of my favorites. Again, being an American, I have to say that this has always been one I have always cherished, even as somebody that's not an Australian. So I will say it before I even introduce my co-host, lest we forget. Thank you, Anzacs. Thank you for your service. Now, let's hop in to the episode. I find it kind of funny, and we kind of talked about this off the mic. Joining me today, my co-host, living in Australia, but an Englishman, the YouTube sensation that is Pommy and Oz. Pommy, great to see you, sir.
It's great to be back as well. I've got to say, I look forward to this. Last year we did it. It's nice, isn't it? The meeting of the foreign minds in our weird and inane love for a game that's alien to both of us. It's just shows the global appeal of our great Australian rules football.
I 100% agree with you on that, sir. And it is always fun. Again, I had to chuckle a little bit that we're talking about Anzac ground, that you have an Englishman and an American. But again, I know I say it many a time that this is one of the coolest rounds. I love the Anzac ground. It is so cool. All of the different fun traditions. The last post, I think I've listened to the last post probably four or five times over the last couple of days, just because it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. It is so cool, and it's such a great thing to respect and to honor those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice, both for country and for this great game. So let's hop into it, sir. Round seven, it has come, it has gone, and this thing has thrown up some rather interesting results, including the fun draw that I know we'll discuss a little bit, that we were talking about off mic as two people that are non-Australians on our opinions on that. So we'll discuss that a little bit later, but just initial thoughts of round seven as a whole.
Well, I mean, this year has been weird, hasn't it? I mean, if you're a tipping man, this year has been probably the hardest to tip, because I fluctuated everywhere from a 9 out of 9 to a 2 out of 9. Like, sometimes I don't know if it's luck, but this week it was really the tales of, there were either thumpings or there were either nail biters. Well, there was no in between. Every side either performed. I don't feel like we learnt a lot as well this week. I looked at the fixture at the start and I was like, okay, we're going to learn a lot about the sides. Mm-hmm. That we're going to see some separation. But the draw, as you said, I don't think anyone would have tipped Essendon to do that. That was remarkable. St Kilda have been heavily talked about and Port have been heavily panned. They came out of nowhere. And we feel like we're waiting for Brisbane to hit grand final form. And GWS were probably the perfect team on paper, having my boys beaten them. They came out and reminded everyone they are premiership fancies, and you could say maybe have cost Brisbane a top four space at round 70. It's a remarkable round, to be honest. When we look at it in context, we've learned nothing but a lot of stories.
Yeah, well, and a lot of different twists and turns too, because like, you look at it, some of them were the obvious ones. Like you sat in your tips going, okay, yep, this is a win, this is a win, this is a win. And a couple of them you went, I'm thinking about it. Like I'll raise my hand. I tipped West Coast in the West Coast Gold Coast game. Like legitimately. Again, I also tipped before I found out they decided to manage Harley Reid. Again, do I respect West Coast decision? Absolutely. But it did kind of hose my tip a little bit. And I'm not one of those that after I put out my episode, I don't change my tip. So honest to honest there, I leave it. If I tip it on the episode, I leave it no matter what happens. So kind of gutted a little bit, because if Harley Reid would have played, I think that might have changed, whether it would have changed the result or not. We can discuss a little bit later, but let's jump right into it. The first round, first game, Wednesday night footy, which led for a fun 5 days of footy, which is absolutely fantastic, as the Melbourne Demons hand a smashing to the Richmond Tigers by 43, 85-42. Again, I've said this a few times. The Tigers are being held together by duct tape and anything that they can, any adhesive brand they can find to keep this team together. They're trying because they're just so many injuries in so many key and important areas. And the D's just showed why that they are that good aside sometimes, as they capitalized on it on a very weakened Richmond Tigers team.
Yeah, this was one of them games that was a surprise because I think, like you said at the start, there's some teams that you just tip. And I think I went and tipped Melbourne with 200% that I had. I was just like, straight away, don't even think about it. And then at half time, I was thinking, be always wary of the Tiger that's injured because they'd gone in with a point lead. They'd made the game scrappy. And I was thinking, Richmond aren't going to do it at the G, are they? But then, fair play, champion teams find a way. And in that second half, I think after about 5 seconds, you realize Melbourne were going to win this. And it was really a case of how much. And they did send a message to the competition. They've not really been talked about this year, but they really did show that they can kick a score very quickly. And they punished Richmond in the end.
Yeah, and you hate saying it too. It's like it's almost like Keziah Pickett's in, they score. Keziah Pickett is out, they have trouble. It's really weird, and I hate going that simple because I don't think it is. But that's the way it seems like some of their rounds where they've had trouble scoring, Keziah Pickett hasn't played because of suspension or not being fit. And the games that he's played, they've looked really dangerous. I don't know if it opens up Bailey Fritch or Van Ruin seems to find a little bit more space, knowing that he doesn't have to mark it because Keziah Pickett's there for the crumb. So it's really interesting. Again, Grimes is back in this one. Again, Melbourne's defense is absolutely fantastic. When you have Lever and May back there, it's very difficult to score. They're one of the best defenses in the entire competition, and Richmond doesn't have a lot of firepower with no Balta, no Lynch, and Dusty is there, but Dusty is not the Dusty of old, unfortunately. When Mother Nature or Father Time is undefeated, unfortunately. So it just always happens. The pomp and circumstance of the game was fantastic. Again, Melbourne was just too good. I agree with you that the first half you were a little bit like, can Richmond pull it off? And Melbourne was just like, nope, hold my beer. We're done with this, and they went to town. So again, kudos to Richmond here. So the talk of Thursday is the Anzac game between Essendon and Collingwood, and here it is, the draw, 85-85. And I look at this was a cracking match, because there have been some question marks over the Dons going into a Pies team that people were saying the Pies team are back, they're gonna kick it into gear, they're gonna start doing. The Dons kept this game close. Langford had a chance to win it, unfortunately didn't execute. But again, is this the Dons playing up to the Pies, or are the Pies still, there's some inconsistencies there, and we can't really say that they're back?
I mean, it was one of them games, wasn't it? I mean, this is another game where after the first quarter, you were like, oh, Essendon are here to play. And then Collingwood do what Collingwood do really well. They edged them back by the half. And you were thinking, okay, we've seen this movie before. Collingwood will cruise this one now. They've pulled them back. But this was like a draw from then on, wasn't it? It was everything. It was like a great heavyweight boxing contest. It was whatever one side had, the other side took and then gave back. And I think Essendon deserve a little bit of credit. I hate both of these teams with a passion, so I'm talking as a pure nut neutral here. I thought Essendon took it to them, but I thought Collingwood again. We just talked about Melbourne. The question mark about Melbourne is key forwards. They trialled Daniel Turner, and he paid dividends. You look at Collingwood; they still lack that real true key forward. And I feel like teams have found them out this year. They know they're going to play to their smalls. And I thought Essendon did a great job and really exposed Brodie Mijacek as the sole tall up top and the big Texan floating there. I worry about Collingwood in that avenue because I think teams have worked it out and I think they really miss Dan McStay. And but they are a champion side, I have to say it. But great game for the neutral.
Yeah, I Collingwood will be there. Like I agree with what most say. I think they'll make finals. I think they'll push a few teams. They could maybe even slip their way into a preliminary final. But I'm one of those that you can only balance on the knife edge so far before you finally get cut. And I'm worried that that teams have had all off season to break down how to beat the Collingwood machine. And I think that finally teams have figured out that if you can attack them into the midfield and force turnover, their aggressive style, this almost running aggressive style, will fail them because they're going to be outnumbered defensively in the back if you can turn them over. Not everybody can do it, but if you can, you can get them on the rebound on the other side because they don't have the defensive coverage because everybody pushes up as soon as the ball is in Collingwood hand. So, like I said, I think they'll make finals. Again, this is an Essendon team. Again, I'm not 100% sold on they have a chance for finals because there's still some inconsistencies with this group. I'm still not 100% sold on Darcy Parrish and Jake Stringer and some of the midfielders. I think they're great players, but can they keep it consistent for the rest of the season is the question. And I still have some question marks on them defensively as well. Sometimes they can get caught out the back a little bit easier, and that's something that's going to burn you as the season goes on. So again, absolutely classic game here. The 2 points is even. We'll discuss the draw topic because I know again every time it happens, it pops up. We'll discuss that in the burning question. So we'll move on up to Manuka, up Oval, up in Canberra, and I will not even hide my shock at the 54-point win by the Giants, 113-59, and this is without Toby Green and Sam Taylor. What has happened to the Brisbane Lions? Because it wasn't going to shock me if GWS wins this, but the margin is what totally threw me off.
Sad to see, isn't it? I mean, Brisbane, oh, so close last year. And it just seems to happen in the AFL a lot. We remember Adelaide versus Richmond, the power stance that they did. They got destroyed by a Dynasty Richmond side. And let's be honest, Adelaide have never recovered. They're still feeling the effects. It seems GWS have been through it, got to a final a bit too early. They didn't recover for a while. And it seems to be that nearly premiership hangover is affecting them because aside that last year were quick, counter-punchy, they could play inside and dirty football. They look a side that's lost at the moment. And it's sad to see GWS on the other hand, though, that they are the media's darling. And I watched this game and they beat up a very weak opposition. And I'm opposite of most people. I still think GWS have straight sets written all over them. I'm still not impressed. Yes, they can score. Yes, they can attack. But you saw against the Mighty Carlton, someone stands there and punches them back. They're not very sufficient. So I've got the Floyd Mayweather question about GWS. 20 fights in. Yes, he can avoid, but what happens when someone cracks you on the chin? And as we know, Floyd Mayweather proved he could dance if he got cracked on the chin. I don't think GWS can, but Brisbane, I think they're already out of the top four now. They're in trouble.
I think they're out of the top four, but I still think they're still on that line where they could even miss finals. Like it's I do think they're still having that run. I don't think they've played some of, shall we say, the lower ended teams on the ladder. So I think they'll get some cheap wins, but there's still matchups with some teams, and I think they're going to give them some headaches. I totally see your point on that when it comes to GWS on they're dancing against teams that can't keep up with them. It's teams that can put up the points against them, and some would even say this week, last time I even looked at the betting favorite was the Sydney Swans in the Sydney Derby this week. We'll discuss that a little bit later, especially as the Swans man that I am. But again, I give my plaudits to the Giants. I mean, they just absolutely blitzed this Lions team. There was just nothing the Lions could do. Charlie Cameron was surprisingly off in this game. That doesn't help. Oscar McInerney's loss, I think, has really kind of thrown this team for a loop. Darcy Fort came in and did the best he possibly could, but it's just not the same. Oscar McInerney's an absolute, he's a unique Ruck character, but he's one of those that just gets the job done. Like he doesn't need a ton of disposals. He just does it, and he gets to where he needs to be. Darcy Fort's kind of plaudits for me a little too much, so it's interesting to see how that goes. But again, fascinating one. Was not expecting that, but again, Giants just too good. We jump over to the Adelaide Oval in an absolute cracking game over at the Oval that led to carnage in this one, especially on the Port Adelaide side. But Port get the win by 10, and we have not only the discussion of the tackle by Higgins, which again I don't want to get into because I think this thing gets talked to death because one event in one game of one round, and it's the most talked about thing ever, and it's rather annoying because maybe it's a little bit of the American football in me, but Higgins' tackle was atrociously done. I don't think he did. Now, is he tackling a guy that's bigger than him and stronger than him? Absolutely. But the other thing that probably helps me go, he probably deserves the three games that he did. And again, we'll do this really quickly, is that he doesn't move his feet when he tackles. If you actually watch it, when he makes contact and tackles, his feet stop. So he has no forward momentum. So that's why he's falling backwards as the tackle happens. And then when he hooks Allaire's arm, that just it just leads to disaster. No matter if Allaire is trying to kick the ball, which he does, which then makes it even worse. But if Allaire doesn't try to kick, he's still going to drive him down head first because he's hooked the one arm that can defend him from hitting the ground as he's falling backwards because he's not driving his feet to try to push the tackle backwards. And I know some people would say, you don't tackle like that in the AFL. I understand that. But if he's moving his feet and not standing still and catching Allaire like he's trying to catch somebody being thrown at him, I think that might have kept him from slinging Allaire face first. That's just me personally. So I don't like going into that, but it's maybe just a little bit of a different look at that. Personally, when I watched it a few times, is that I think Higgins doesn't help himself by standing still and kind of catching and then throwing like a WWE wrestler. So Port good, but Allaire goes down with his injury. Unfortunately, again, my thoughts go out to Sam Culpepper, ACL injury. You'd never like to see a player go down with that. And then unfortunately, it looks like Rosie could be done, could be have pinged a hamstring for at least a week, which really kind of stinks going into a big matchup with Adelaide.
An interesting one because we've got the Sydney Derby this week, which probably is the derby of the Premiership fancies. And this game here was really the bridesmaid derby, wasn't it? I watched this game and I was like, this is two good teams that are probably going to be inside the eight, fighting for eighth because 10 other teams aren't good enough, not because they're good enough. And it's a weird one because St Kilda are starting to annoy me because I thought last year Ross the Boss had got them looking regimented. They were tough to beat. And then he flirted with that slingshot football style. And we were all like, Ross the Boss isn't boring anymore. And it feels like as soon as the pressure's come on, form's not so good. He's gone straight back to boring football. And if we watch this game again, 11 goals, 16 from Port. Port could have won this by GWS's margin. And we're having a conversation of, is Ross the Boss? Is it time for a change? I think both of these sides are in different scenarios, but I've got a feeling if St Kilda don't make a change at the end of the season, they're going to be the next Port Adelaide. All the talent in the world, nothing to show for it. And I felt both of these sides here showed why there's seven sides better than them in the league. It wasn't a great spectacle of football, this one. It was two sides trying not to lose as opposed to trying to win it. And I learned a lot in this game where I was like, okay, both of you are definitely not going to flirt with the top six.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. This is one that I agree with you. There's two teams that are just very, very mercurial. You're not 100% sure what you're gonna get with them again. It's like you see that the Port Adelaide, the trio in the middle, and you're like, okay, Port Adelaide, this they're gonna be this dominant team and everything like that. There's still some deficiencies defensively because they're still trying to kind of gel three defenders that have not played with each other very often, with Zerk Thatcher and Radicalea coming in. And their forward line is just so hit or miss. Like, it's Charlie Dixon can go absolutely bonkers, or Marshall can go bonkers, or they all just kind of become like wary. And it's really weird. Like, and again, I think Dixon is constantly fighting injury because the guy just goes through everything. Marshall again can kind of be can be kind of off and on. He's kind of like a microwave. He's either really on or he's really off. It's really kind of interesting. Rioli has Willie Rioli is still not 100% gotten back to what I think he was at West Coast. I think he has flashes of moments, but again, he's a little bit too much like light coming out of a refrigerator. It's really flash and then it's back off again. So it's I love I if you look at Port Adelaide's list on paper, it looks really good. But some of their best are just not performing up to what they are. And this, you come into a game this week against Adelaide where I think it's a danger game because you kind of need to start racking, you need to start chalking up some wins because some of the tougher teams are still on your schedule. And St. Kilda, I 100% agree with you. I just don't know. Ross cannot make up his mind whether he wants to be Ross the Boss or Cuddly Ross. And it's really annoying. It's really, really annoying. Ross, make up your mind, dude. Do you want to play cute football? Do you want to play kick and run football? Or do you want to play good defensive, kind of gritty football? Because you can't do both at the same time. It's just not going to work. And you have a bunch of speedsters on your team. And I didn't mind Cuddly Ross a little bit because it made it the run and gun style has become very, very fashionable in the AFL over the last couple of seasons. But there are times that he turns him back to this dour defensive team. It's like, stop it, Ross. Just let these young guys run. Just let the horses out of the gate and just let them run in the field. Come on. So I don't know. Like I said, I hope one of these two gets their you know what together and finally starts playing the footy that I was hoping that either of these two play, because they're both good enough they should make finals, but they're both have their moments where I kind of go, do you even deserve to be there? It's we'll have to see. Again, two teams that frustrate the crap out of me because they're in this weird purgatory of they should be finalists, but we're not 100% sure. So we jump to another purgatory. We jump to the addressing of another purgatory team in a term that literally is in hell, unfortunately, as the Adelaide Crows go down to Blunston Arena and layeth the smacketh down to North. Again, 138-81, a 57-point win by the Crows. I'm going to be very, very honest. Again, this doesn't shock me. The Crows should win this by that score. In fact, I was almost a little disappointed it wasn't higher. Again, North fans, I love you, but this North team is a rabble, and I just don't know what to do because it's, I mean, I think the questions are completely valid. Is Clarko lost it, or was Clarko ever this great coach, or was he a benefit of a really good list that he was able to kind of sit on the coattails of? I mean, I hate saying it that way, but I'm starting to lean that way because if this guy is the coaching master that he is, why is this North team regressing in some areas?
A weird one, isn't it? I mean, you watch. I mean, Adelaide needed this. I know Adelaide beat us, but I felt like they needed to, like you used the analogy, let the horse out of the gate. And it felt like this was the game that all the players had good touches. They all got involved. You could see that this was almost like a training exercise at the end of the game. And I think the perfect start for Adelaide coming into the showdown, they are. Everyone on that list now has played a bit of football and played well. But North Melbourne, I mean, you can make the excuses. I mean, their back line, they've had horrendous injuries. And when you're going into the back line with the boys like you've got problems. I mean, let's be honest, I don't think any of their backmen are AFL standard aside from Luke McDonald. I think Aidan Corey is kind of your fringe AFL standard. They've played Toby Pink there. Bigowa Nguyen, he's not played that many games though. So when you're under the cosh, the last thing you want is babies in the back half of the ground. But they are so easy to beat. Like, I'm a Carlton fan. I saw 2018 where at times I thought I could beat Carlton on my own. I could definitely beat North Melbourne on my own. They look limp. They look fragile. It's monotonous. And Izzy Clarke, I mean, that side is. I always judge a rebuilding side. When I look at Hawthorn, the spine's sorted. When I look at that side, it's like they've got the ribs, but they've got a gelatin spine. And I don't think you can play football like that. And I think this could get ugly. Like, I actually can't see North winning a game.
Yeah, with West Coast Harley with Harley Reid fever taking over West Coast, I'm sitting there too, and again, I don't want to again. And I have many a North supporter who I'm really close to, and I go back and forth with. But I look at their schedule going, I don't see, unless the team literally just forgets to show up. I have a hard time seeing it, and it's very discouraging. And now we're even getting the great comment by Eddie McGuire that why don't we just move North to Tasmania? I'm like, really, come on. Like, coming from you, it just comes off, and again, pardon my French to those that are listening, it just comes off as a dick move. Like, seriously. Like, I understand you make it off like you want to be great for the competition, but dude, coming out of your mouth, it just, again, comes like a dick move. I understand it. The Tasmanian government don't want a cast off team. They want their own team. So it's like, it's just it's, I mean, you had your chance to move a team down to Tasmania and convince them that it was their club a long time ago, and they just didn't do it. So I don't like the discussion. Again, I'm 100% with you. This is a gross team. They needed that win. They got it. Now what? Like, it's like, I'm not gonna like I don't want to do the proverbial pat on the back for the Crows, because I mean, this was a game you should win. So it's this is the I remember finishing this game going, oh, that was exactly what I expected. I don't know what else to say. Like, there wasn't much else. So I'm not gonna waste any more breath because I have to go to the next one. This was an absolute classic. As I was telling Pommy, I watched this game. This game started at like 2 in the morning my time, and I was watching it, and I just could not fall asleep because it was so intriguing. It was such great footy back and forth. And unfortunately for my buddy Palmy, who is a huge Carlton Blues fan, the Cats find a way to get it done by 13, 118, 105. But this was a classic. Like, legitimately, when you're a neutral and you want a game to watch that is absolutely scintillating, great ball movement, tackling, scintillating footy, this was it. Holy shnikes. I know you didn't come out on the top there, Palmy, but this was one hell of a game of football.
Yeah, I mean, we're on the boxing analogy train this week, and it reminded me of Canelo Alvarez versus Floyd Mayweather this game. It was, you've got the young Mexican who are Carlton, star power, you know he's going to be a superstar, going up against the wily old master of boxing, Floyd Mayweather. And basically, in the fourth quarter, it was like watching Mayweather in the final couple of rounds. That class, that intelligence, that experience shows. And he puts the young pup to the sword and reminds him who the daddy is. And for the Blues here, they had opportunities to win it. And I think it comes down to efficiency. Geelong, they took their opportunities. The Blues were wasteful. And where you saw last week has been very wasteful, but we managed to bully GWS and intimidate them. Geelong weren't intimidated by the Blues. They knew that even when Carlton went on that spurt, and how often do you see it, Charlie Kerner? Give his biceps, the other teams fold, they panic, they know it's coming. Geelong looked reassured, and fair play to Geelong. It's not often I lose that I'll put my hands up and go, well done. We were beaten by the better side on the day, but I do think the Blues will have learnt a lot from that game to know that they are a top four side. And I thought Voss's words at the end reassured the fans. We're a top four side, so we should be winning these games, and we play them in 7 weeks. I expect that score flipped when we play next time.
And the good thing is that it shows the change of attitude towards a loss like this. Like you go back 5 or 6 years ago, I mean, this was almost the honorable loss. You kind of you pat yourself on the back, you're like, well, yay, we did really, really good against a really good team. Boss is like, nope, unacceptable. We cannot do this. Too many mistakes when that cost us the game. I love the change of thought process on that, because one of the best ways to make a team a championship side or a winning side is to not accept losses. You have to take full accountability of it. You cannot paper over a crack in a loss like this, because it's one of the reasons that it happened. I 100% agree with you. And the other thing to think about it though, with Carlton is that you do have some injuries. And again, I know some people like it's an excuse. I'm not saying it as an excuse. It's almost kind of it's. It makes me look at this Carlton team like even higher, because the fact that you don't have McGovern, you don't have Saad, you have some of these guys out, and you play this well. The halfback line was not nearly what it could be. So this is going to be a fun one in a few weeks, when hopefully you get both of those great halfback players coming back in, with McGovern and Saad being back on the side. That's going to be a cracking game later on in the year. I thoroughly enjoyed that one. So we go on to another team that's got me again befuddled and confused. In fact, both of these teams do, is the Fremantle Dockers get a 24-point win over the Western Bulldogs. Nat Fyfe 2017 strikes again as the old Nat Fyfe comes back to play. But this damn Bulldogs are like Jekyll and Hyde. Make up your damn minds, Western Bulldogs, because you're really, really annoying. Because again, this is another one. I tipped the doggies thinking they played really well against Essendon. Maybe they figured it out. And then I realized they went over to Optus Stadium. OMG, they totally forgot. And finally, the Dockers maybe have figured out what was ailing them early in the year.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I got out of this game is how bad are St Kilda, to be honest, because I'm going to go on record now. The Bulldogs might be the worst side in the history of the AFL to ever win three games, because I can't believe that this side is a side that people have had in the eight. Beveridge, he seems lost, and it's the tactical in game as well. This game started going away from the doggies really about half time. That third quarter, you could see there was worries that Fremantle were starting to get on top, and then when the fourth quarter happened, Fremantle looked like the flag favourites against them. They controlled that narrative, and I thought the doggies went out with a fight. And using Cowan's analogy, one thing that made me proud what a good team does is they fight till the end. The dogs once they kicked that, once Luke Jackson got the ball to Bailey Banfield, that goal, it was only a 12-point lead. It felt like dogs were like, nah, okay, cool. Like, you've won this. Let's survive till next week. I think the doggies are in trouble, and Fremantle, fair play to them. I thought Fremantle were going to be challenging North and the Eagles this year. That they found something. I thought that Eagles' loss were going to kill them, but they've got some togetherness, and how good is it to see Nat Fyfe come back and play the way he does? I've missed it because Nat Fyfe, probably my favourite non-Carlton player. I do love a bit of Fyfe.
Yeah, Fyfe has been one of those. I've been hoping that we see top level Fyfe back again, and thankfully he gave it to us. The question will be, is can he back it up? Because again, he's no spring chicken. I'm not going to say he's old, because again, it's really awkward when most of the players in the AFL are younger than I am, and I'm calling them old. It's really, really weird. So. But I just both these teams are they Jekyll and Hyde me a little too much, because Fremantle has that chances has those moments where they can't score for the life of them. I mean, a wet paper sack is playing good enough defense to stop this Fremantle team. And this Western Bulldogs is they're almost all offense and midfield, and that's about it. Defensively, Liam Jones is trying to hold back an avalanche sometimes, and sometimes he maintains a little bit enough to let the doggies win, or other times he gets absolutely overrun, which is kind of crazy. So has Bevo's selections been an issue? I mean, again, I don't know. I'm not sitting there at Bevo's trainings at the Western Bulldogs and seeing what some of these guys that have been sitting out or not playing have been doing. So I don't know. Both of these teams have frustrated me this year, because both these teams I thought had the opportunity to be in finals contention. I'm not, I was one of those, I thought the doggies were on this, that they were on that knife's edge, ninth, eighth, ninth, 10th, because I worry they're too inconsistent, and I was pretty much right on that one. So it just, yeah, can't, don't want to talk too much more about that one, because again, that one, it pulled my hair out a little bit by that result. So up to People's First Stadium up on the Gold Coast. And again, I, like I said, full disclosure, I tipped the West Coast Eagles before I found out Harley Reid sat. And you could kind of tell that Harley Reid sits, and a little bit of that energy that they've gotten over the last couple of wins just wasn't there. Gold Coast get the win. Was it perfect? No. I mean, Dimmer Hardwick losing his absolute mind on a couple of those ugly turnovers that led to goals was kind of made me chuckle a little bit, not at him, but just and then the hearing that the new category of one of his things, the stat that he keeps his shit goals, which made made me chuckle so much when I heard about that. But a 112 to 75 win for the Gold Coast Suns again. Rogers, one of their new youngsters, looked absolutely sensational. This is a Gold Coast team again. I don't think they're a finals team this year, but I think they finally found the right mix. And maybe Dima might be the right guy to get him into the finals. I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon like David King and some of these guys are like, they're going to win a premiership in the next 3 seasons. I'm not going to go that far. Because again, you are still talking about a bunch of South Australian, Victorian, and Western Australians playing in the Gold Coast. As much as Dima and winning can help, are they all going to stay? That's my biggest question. They're starting to draft some Queensland kids, which may help this a little bit, but there's still some of their best, the Noah Andersons, the Jack Lukosciuses. Will they stay or will they go home eventually? We'll have to see. Again, this was an interesting one for me.
I love this game. I mean, Jake Rogers, for those who follow my show, we were hot on him. And I warned people that Cowan's 2015 draft is often lauded. I thought this was the equivalent today because I think Jake Rogers, easily a top five player. He was fantastic. They've got Will Graham as well, another young kid from their academy who has really hit the ground running. And I think what I look at when I look at Gold Coast and I look at North Melbourne, Gold Coast, they've got the spine. Ben King up top, right? Got Jack Lukosciuces back playing forward. Then you've got Sam Collins, Mac Andrew now slotting in down back. Tuck Miller leading the midfield with Matty Rowell and Noah Anderson. That team has got
And Jared
its
Witts.
pieces
Don't
in its
forget
places.
Jared Witts. He's one of the most underrated rucks in the competition. He's one of those, honestly, he's the least talked about really good ruck in the entire competition. Sorry to interrupt you, but I want to
And
give
then, like
Jared
you
his
say,
wits. I
and then you've said, like you say, you've got Witts, who's now going to be training for me, probably the best ruckman we've ever seen come through the draft in the last decade, and Ethan Reid. And everything Jared Witts is not, Ethan Reid has in abundance. It's not the ruck work yet. And we know Jared Witts, master ruckman. So already the tool's there. So I thought this game told me something because I agree with you. I was looking at this and thinking, Suns, fragile young side with some senior players, can they threaten them? And this game showed me that the Gold Coast are the real deal. When they've got to win, they win. And I think Gold Coast may have taken the preseason spot of the doggies here. I think the Gold Coast are as sure as a lock for the top eight as I've seen. And I think once they get into finals, won't be this year, maybe not next year, but I do think that once they start playing finals and they get used to it, it's going to keep the players there. It's an attractive quality. Tasmania coming in means draft picks are going to be harder to trade. I think Gold Coast might have hit their form at the right time in the AFL's calendar. I think they're a phenomenal side. And Dimmer, Jesus, he's got them humming, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, and the other thing too is that what I loved about it, and again, I knew it, it got to be in the bonnet of some of the Victorians, but the fact that they got their academy kids, local kids, which I think will help a lot more, because I mean, I remember a few years ago, Gold Coast had a team of the first decade, and when you look at it, it was almost a joke, because 11 of the 18 that were in this side no longer donned Suns jerseys. in other teams. So it's like it almost became a joke a little bit what Gold Coast was doing, because they were basically, I mean, to use an American analogy, they were a farm team for the rest of the competition. They progressed and developed the youngsters, and then when they were ripe and ready to be plucked, the Victorians or the South Australians or any of the other teams in the competition simply plucked them off the vine and put them on their list. So Gold Coast was they were a glorified farm team for the longest time. So I almost kind of loved the tizzy that Victorians got when they got four kids this year. Like I almost kind of enjoyed it. And again, maybe it's the interstate fan in me a little bit, plus the fact with the academy with the Swans that I love when they get their feathers ruffled, because their need this is a national competition. It's not just the VFL. So, and again, I want all these teams to be competitive, and I know it's a compromised draft, father sons, everything like that. It does throw a lot of things off. But Gold Coast, for the longest time, everybody's complaining they're not good enough. They're not good enough. They're not good enough. They get four really good players that they've developed themselves, and now it's a problem. I was a little that turbed me just a little bit. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on the anti-Victorian rant there, but I'm happy for the Suns. I question them on the road though, because they've shown a lot of fragility on the road. So, and you can win the 11 games at home, that's great. But when you go on the road, you gotta win three or four to get into finals, and I worry that that's where their weakness is. So we'll have to see. Again, I agree with you. I think the Suns they found that right. They found that right mix. Can they make it stick as the season goes on? Again, 7 rounds in, not looking
Absolutely.
too
I
bad.
think we've
So
got to give them credit, though. They've made Gold Coast a fortress, which, I
I
mean,
agree.
we have an interstate club here in Victoria. No one talks about Geelong. They're technically not Victorian. We don't count them as Victorian. But every game at the GMHBA, it's a nightmare. Playing at GMHBA, nightmare. Like, they are odds-on favourites. So I think Gold Coast have got the right mantra. It's hard to go there, which is part A1. A1 of the plan. So no, I'm with you. I love Gold Coast, and I hope they go well. I hope they go well. It's about time.
I do too. I really do too. Again, I still want to give them a year before I think they make at least a year before they make finals. But again, I will gladly eat crow if they do. So, last but not least, down to the MCG, where the Swans hand a 76-point win over the Hawks. And normally I'm not one to kind of lean on this a little bit, but I have to ask this as somebody that watches footy a lot. What the hell is Sam Mitchell talking about when he was quoted as saying, "Well, if you didn't watch it with a scoreboard, you would have thought the Hawks were having a crack." I watch this game and I don't pay attention to the scoreboard. I watch the game. I try not to keep track of the scoreboard. Again, sometimes it can be misleading. I've seen games where the scoreboard says one team is leading, but that team is kind of just they're taking their chances, but for the most part, they're not. This was not that game. The Hawks were making numerous errors. The Swans' pressure was really making them fumbly. They were erratic sometimes. I know that the one that everybody's calling out was the kick towards the center corridor that got turned over that led to another goal for the Swans just before halftime, that he let the mighty spray go to his player. I'm worried the frustration of the lack of success is starting to get to Coach Mitchell now, because he's usually this calm, cool customer. He's usually takes things well, but that was probably the fieriest I've seen him, not only in the box, but also in the press conference, because he's going to bat on something that I just think he's dealing with a lot of injuries. He's dealing with a lack of progression, if I'm being honest, with this Hawks team that we saw a lot of good signs last year that we're just not seeing again. We're 7 games in. Again, things could still change, but it's a worrying sign that you're getting smashed by over 50. It seems like every other game.
Interesting one with Sam Mitchell, because I mean, I think the stat he was looking at being a midfielder, I think he was looking at the clearance stat, but I mean, I think he's also got to look at Sydney. Sydney aren't a very good clearance side, they're in the lower echelon of the clearance. That's not their strength. I do feel Sam Mitchell is probably getting a little bit erratic and he wants to defend these boys, but I think the case in point is look at the tackle count. Sydney out tackled them. And they had the ball more, which always worries me. If you have the ball more, and you're winning tackles, that's probably a detriment to the opposition. But Sydney Swans, I know everyone is talking about Geelong are the flag favourites and the 7-0. Geelong, I mean, Sydney are just in another round. They've got what, the second least points kicked against them. So that's the second best defence. The second most goals points scored. This side, just quietly, is a worry because that Sydney game was, that Richmond game was an anomaly. Richmond played all-star football.
And they were
Aside
a
from
lot
that,
more
Sydney.
healthy than they have been. Lynch played, Bolta played, Prestia played, Martin was one of the few that didn't play in that game. Grimes played too as well. Or Grimes didn't play as well. Grimes and Martin were the only two that were out for that game. So I'm 100% with you. I'm like, I think sometimes people are like, well, look at them with that loss to Richmond. I said, yeah, but Richmond was a lot healthier at that time. In fact, it was that game that cost them Bolta and Lynch and Prestia. So it's a little bit
I'm
of a
with you,
difference
and
there.
I thought that Richmond game as well. When I watched it, everything that could go right went right for Richmond. It was one of them games
I
where
agree.
every 50-50 went their way, the bounce. But one stat I always look for in championship sides is the average amount of goal scorers per game, because I think if you can spread it, it's hard to beat, right? And this was my issue with Carlton last year because we were one of the least. And you guys average just under 10 different goal scorers per game. And this game, I thought, showcased it. You had what? Three from McDonald, Heaney, Wicks, and Haywood, soon to be a blue bagger, if you believe the rumours. But Warner, Papley, McLean, Jordan, everyone was popping up with goals, which makes it so hard to defend. And I look at Sydney and I'm just like, this side here, how do you stop them? Because if you stop McDonald, McLean bags a goal. If you stop McLean and McDonald, Papley's there. If you stop them, Haywood's there.
Or our
Golden
body,
can
yep.
kick goals. James Jordan can kick goals. Wicks can kick goals. Like, you can't stop all of them. One of them has to kick a goal. And I look at Sydney and I think they are the most complete team in the AFL. And at this stage, I know it's early, you're hoping for injuries, because if they stay fit, they've got the best depth in the league, Sydney, as well. Like, there's still players not playing, I think, could do it. So I look at Sydney now, and they are pole position. They're the team you do not want to play, because I
Yeah.
think you get found out very quickly. They look remarkable.
It'll be interesting. I know Luke Parker had 30, I think it was 36 in the VFL, and he's still coming back from his broken arm. Dane Rampe is, I think a couple weeks away with his hamstring injury. Some of the depth players that we can come in case of injury, like a Gus Sheldrick still is, I think, fitting back at the VFL, and I think he had 35 possessions this week in their VFL game. So the depth for Sydney, I know I've talked with a few of my Sydney Swans friends, and they were like, this is probably the deepest Swans team. I mean, and Pete Laddams is having a pretty good year in the VFL. So even if Grundy goes down, we've got a capable backup in that. But it's one of those that I think many people thought, well, Buddy's out, it's going to hurt the Swans. The Swans aren't going to, like, almost, I hate agreeing it, but Buddy's retirement has actually opened up our forward line to be even a little bit more unpredictable, because you've got the three talls in Armadi, McLean, and McDonald. So it's like, who do you take? Like, who do you stop? Because they're not dominant. They're not like a five or six goal every game type of forward line for just one of them. They all kind of chip in with two or three, and they spread it out. Will Hayward, which is fascinating. I hear Carlton, but I've also heard he's a South Australian, so Port Adelaide and Adelaide are both into him too. He's the one I worry as a Swans fan that might get away, because I think they wrapped up Robe on him. They've wrapped up Goulden. I think McDonald is next. And then Ollie Florent, and I know I'm everything I'm hearing, Florent and McDonald are pretty much the next two. Hayward may be the odd man out, which would stink, because he's that ultimate role player. He can play the defensive role, and he can kick goals too. He's timely when he kicks his goals sometimes too. So it'll be fascinating. But my worry with the Swans is when you play a really good ruck. Like, this week scares me a little bit with Karen Briggs, because Briggs is a really good ruck. Grundy is sufficiently doing enough to kind of make everything out. Do they get blown out of the water when they play a good clearance team that can clear the ball out? It'll, like, this Sydney Derby is going to be absolutely insane. I cannot wait for it because it's really going to tell which of the Sydney sides is going to be at the top, is going to be more towards the top. I think they're both going to be in the top four because there are very few teams that have the firepower. Like looking at the top three right now on the ladder, Geelong, Sydney, Gold, GWS. There aren't many teams that can run with all of these three, with all three of these teams, because they've got four or five dangerous forwards. And I'm kind of with you on Carlton. I think that's the one thing that I think everybody's like, you've got the Twin Towers. But after the Twin Towers, who do you have? Motlop's been hurt, unfortunately. If you can get him healthy and Durden can be consistent, Carlton then can become that team. But the issue is they're always going to Mackay and to Kurnow. There's no, you can kind of focus on those two and let the others, as long as you can make sure that you don't give up crumbs. So it'll be fascinating. Again, Carlton's probably the most dangerous side besides the top three. And I think is the top four. I think Cats, Swans, Giants, and Carlton will be the top four at the end of the year. Hopefully, we'll cross our fingers on that one. So that is it. That is all nine games from the Anzac round. We jump to the burning questions and we'll jump right into it, sir. As an Englishman who's watched plenty of football, I must ask you, the debate is back again. Every single time there's a draw, the debate comes for extra time. Or I've even heard the ridiculous comment of doing a shootout like the NHL from 40 meters out. I mean, your thoughts on this? Should there be extra time, or is level at full time perfectly okay with you?
I think when it's a regular season game, 2 hours of football, two teams going toe to toe, and I'm going to be honest, it's not like my game, which is 90 minutes, and quite often you can see a draw where one side has destroyed a side, and the other side has put 11 men behind the ball. AFL scoring system, 6 for a goal, 1 for a point, makes a draw a mathematical improbability anyway. But genuinely, our draws, Richmond last year against Carlton, the Essendon Collingwood game, it's literally point for point, goal for goal, two sides who can't be separated. And ultimately, it's a novelty. We have what, one, two a year? It's not like it's a big problem. And we talked off camera, I agree with you. It's kind of a nice novelty in the ladder, having a side that's in that 2 point gap. Because it kind of separates, creates a little separation in the league, which really opens it up and makes it exciting. Because all it takes now is for a side to lose, and that 2 points becomes really important because Essendon and Collingwood haven't lost. They gained 2 points. So, nah, I think it's a novelty. In finals, I don't agree in a full game replay, it should be a quarter, but in regular season, keep it as it is. It's beautiful.
I'm 100% with you. And for me, I'm an NHL supporter, NHL fan. And when they got rid of the tie or draw, and they went to overtime, and I went, why? I said, you're making these guys play extra. So somebody gets the point that, I mean, you could literally get a team, as you said, that kind of plays defensively. They survive to overtime, and then they get lucky and get a win. They didn't really deserve it. Like if you go off the whole game as a whole, sometimes you can get a team that gets the points that probably wasn't the best team on the day. So I love the draw. I think the draw tells both teams, hey, you were good, just not good enough to win. And I like it. Again, it's the fun novelty of the extra 2 points. I mean, like I'm literally sitting on the ladder, like the point spread from 7 to 10 is that is or 7 to 11 is only two games. So I mean that's how crazy this is. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. I think the draw now it puts Essendon and Collingwood under a little bit of pressure. They've only got 2 points in the bag, so you've got to maybe win a game later on in the year that you maybe didn't have to. So it's a lot of fun. So we'll jump to the next one. We kind of addressed this, but I'm interested to see how you answer it. The Cats, the only unbeaten team, top of the ladder, 7-0, 28 points. Are they the best team in the comp right now? Or is there another side that you're looking at that you honestly think is the best team so far through the first seven rounds?
For me, the best side, football side that I look at is your boys, Sydney. I look at them and I think if you stay healthy, boy oh boy, it's going to be tough to beat you. And I do think a big part of that is the main man, Brody Grundy. I think, said it last year, felt Sydney missed a real ruckman. They've got, for me, a ruckman who is the best. I know Max Gawn is heralded. I think Brody Grundy for me, if I had to buy a ruckman and have both, I couldn't make a decision with full quality. Geelong, fair play to them though. I mean, what Geelong have, which should always be respected, is they've been there and they've done it. They know how to beat you. And I do find it interesting because we talked about stats. We know I love my stats. Turnover stat is the stat that evidently the flag winners come from. And I agree, historically it is. The turnover sides, GWS and Sydney, leading the tree, 65 points to 63 points. Everyone criticizes my Blues, right, with turnover, but our turnover is almost identical to Geelong, and we've been missing our two most components from scores from turnover for 2 weeks. And I would say that's what counts Geelong out. I don't look at Geelong as a great slingshot side, and I look at their points for and their points against. The anomaly was against my Blues, but watching how easily Sydney score and defend, I think they're pole. I would actually have Geelong second, Carlton third, GWS fourth, because I don't rate GWS's stoppage game at all. But I do think Geelong will be there, and they're a team in finals that'll be interesting because they've been there, they've done it recently, and that does count. You know from your American sports, having that wily old head on your shoulders. Been there, done it. I've got the sheep t-shirt. I've got the song soundtrack. It does mean a lot when it matters. And that's going to be always a threat. Geelong have been there and they've done it many a time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting again. Coach Scott is always he always finds little wrinkles sometimes. So the Cats are one of those teams that they're very hard to plan for because there's always something they do something weird. They do something different each and every time. Again, it's still very early. I mean, they still have to play Sydney. They still have to play GWS. I think Carlton again. Carlton wasn't full strength. I think if full strength Carlton team, I think that's an even more entertaining game. The top four is going to be fun. Like I think it's going to fluctuate a lot. There's still a lot of moving parts. You've still got some games that I think are going to be interesting. So I'm. It is going to be fun to watch this year because I'm not going to fully pull out Melbourne either. I think Melbourne's issue will be can they figure out the scoring? Hopefully, if Kaziah Pickett cannot get suspended, I think Melbourne's there. Honestly, I think those are the five teams vying for the premiership this year. I don't mind Collingwood, but I just think they've been found out a little bit, and I don't think they can get the genie back in the bottle or the toothpaste back into the tube in this situation. I just don't think they can find everything. I think Collingwood will make finals, and if Essendon and Fremantle cannot make up their minds whether they want to be a good football side or not, there's a shot Gold Coast could make finals too. It's going to be a fun run for it. So we'll have some fun. Let your blue bagger out big time on this one. Your Blues just fell short against the Cats this week, but I think they played still a very good game. It's still a very good game of football for the side that they had out. Do you come out of this game more positive about your side's chances this year?
Yeah, because I think I was saying to one of my mates yesterday that when we look at 2019, when we had our worst year in 2018, and there was starting to get a bit of positivity back, I think when we used to lose these games, and like you said, honourable losses, if you were honest, to be a good side, the gap was miles. No matter how positive we were, it was from here to Pluto away, right? Now it feels like it's from me to you away in geographical distance. So when you put that in perspective, a 12, 18-hour flight to America isn't that far. But it's still quite a long way in sport, but it's not that far. And I think that there are things that we're losing games now, like the Adelaide game and this game, where you can identify five moments and go, right, if that didn't happen and if we executed like this, we win. Where before it was like, if we do this, do that, and then probably sack 12 players and bring in 12 of the All-Australian team, we might be a good side. So I'm really bullish on us, and I think that the win against GWS shouldn't be understated. Everyone at the time, they were astronomically good, and they've just destroyed Brisbane. And I think this week is a defining week for the Blues. To knock off the reigning premiers always means something. And I think for the Blues, gets a chance just to flex its muscles a little bit and remind the AFL comp we're one of the guys to watch.
Yep, 100% agree with you on that one. I think this could be one to really cement yourself in that top four category if you knock off Collingwood. And unfortunately, they're a little wounded potentially with no Tommy, with no Mitchell, and potentially no Jordan DeGoey, as a Paddy Cripps and Matt Wa and Sam Walsh should be licking their lips because a weakened midfield of the Collingwood Magpies. It's an intriguing one at that one. So we jump to it. I love this one. Round eight. I'm literally looking at the fixture right now, going, where is a bad game? Like I'm even, well, actually, there might be one between St. Kilda and North Melbourne, but I mean, other than that, there's not a bad game on this because you've got intrigue. Even the Richmond Fremantle game at the MCG, can the Dockers go travel all the way out east and do well? So, I mean, this is a scintillating round. So I want you to do this for me. I want you to take the Blues game against Collingwood out because I know that's your favorite, because as a Baggers fan, you cannot argue it. What other game in round eight are you going to sit down and watch because it's got your fancy?
I think the Sydney Derby, to be honest. I think I've really, that's one that's got real intrigue. You've got GWS's sexy football, the new way, Adam Kingsley, young coach, versus Force, the old way, hard-edged, the blood spirit. I think that's the game where you're going to see old school meets new school. And I've got a sneaky suspicion you're going to see old school still 30 points better than new school.
It's very interesting because Sydney Derbies. I went through the record books, and somebody put this out. If the game is within 10 points or less, GWS tend to win. If the game is 10 points or more, Sydney tend to win because the last three of the last four games, Sydney have won, and their wins by our combined margin of 25 or more. GWS's combined win total is like three. It's insane. So if it's a close game, as a Swans fan, you start to tighten up a little bit. But I'm gonna go a little bit different. So I'll take the Sydney Derby off a little bit. And I again, no disrespect to the Carlton Collingwood game, but mine is Thursday night. I mean, the showdown. I can't look away from the showdown because I think it's one of the most underrated rivalries in the AFL because it's not Victorian. Again, I'm not trying to bash Victoria here, but I gotta give my South Australian friends some love here. This, I mean, there's a vitriol between these two teams. You just don't see very much. You get the vitriol between Carlton and Collingwood because of the years, but the fact that there's this so much vitriol, and this game is never predictable. As soon as you think, oh, Power's a really good team, they're playing well, but this year they've got all the injuries, but the Crows are inconsistent. This is Thursday night. Adelaide Oval is going to be magnificent. I cannot wait for that one. And then I have to also give the plaudits. MCG, the Saturday night game, Melbourne, Geelong. That is going to be absolutely must watch on that one because Melbourne, staunch defensively, so good, and a Cats team that on its day can be quite the fun matchup there. So that is the other one I cannot wait for. Like I said, too many
I
games.
agree with you there. I think that's a ripping game. I mean, Adelaide, I'm excited. Dan Curtin, early news, he's going to debut. I'm going to spoil it for everyone. Guaranteed Rising Star nomination this week because that kid can play.
I've everything that I've seen, and he put up in the Sandful this week, he put up 30 and a goal from the halfback line. So he's the
Oh,
kid
this
is
kid's special.
Oh yeah.
He's Tom Stewart reincarnated.
He's one of those Adelaide, probably with the play of the draft moving up and picking him up at eight. He's an absolute steal. He was a top five guy. He should not have fallen out of the top five and did because of the Gold Coast Suns Academy players and everything like that. So I'm 100% with you. He was one of those. He's one of those. He could be, I agree with you, the Tom Stewart 2.0 for the future. So we jump to the part of the podcast where I kind of take over just the tiniest bit because I always have a little bit of fun. So we'll jump to my team of the week here. I always have fun with this one. So we'll start with the defensive side. So we start with Melbourne's Stephen May, Sydney's Nick Blakey, and GWS's Harry Himmelberg. On the halfback line, we see Bailey Dale of the Western Bulldogs, Essendon's Nick Martin, and St. Kilda's Jack Sinclair. On the wings, I got to give some love to the wings, Geelong's Zach Tui and Carlton's Blake Akers. In the center sees Carlton's Patrick Cripps, Gold Coast's Noah Anderson, and Sydney's Isaac Heaney. In the ruck sees Tim English of the Western Bulldogs. And the half forward line sees Bailey Banfield of the Fremantle Dockers, Isaac Rankin of the Adelaide Crows, and Jeremy Cameron of the Geelong Cats. And the full forward line, the new Plugger Lockett, it seems like he kicks four or five every week. And that's Jacob Waterford of the West Coast Waterman. Oh my gosh, why does it keep auto-correcting? Sorry. Part Adelaide's Charlie Dixon and Essendon's Kyle Langford. On the bench, on the defensive side, we see Ollie Florent of the Sydney Swans. At the ruck sees Melbourne's Max Gawn. At the midfield sees Gold Coast Matty Rowell. And forward, Collingwood's Brody Mayacek. So I know that was a lot of names really, really quickly. Your thoughts on the team of the week?
Mate, I liked it. I do like the love for Blake Akers, my little Blake, as he's affectionately known. For me, him and Errol Goulden, probably the two standout wings I feel this season. And I know Errol Goulden's sexy, but there's something about the Magnolia paint that is Blake Akers. He's everywhere. We call him COVID on the watch alongs. Because you can't see him, but he happens to be everywhere. So good nominations. I like the love as well for Zach Tui, former blue bagger. He punched the chest when he kicked his third, which didn't go down very well. But excuse my friend.
I noticed that the Carlton Twitter kind of lost their proverbial shit on
Yeah,
that.
well, excuse my French, but I like a bit of shithousery in my footballers. It's something we see in the UK a lot. So I admired it. I tipped my cap to it. But no, I think it's a good team. I was impressed. There was only, what, four Sydney players there? Must have been hard not to put the whole 22, wasn't it?
They as you kind of stated, it was one of those where it was like normally it seems like Sydney's got Tommy Papley kicks four, McDonald kicks four, and then you get then the spread of twos and ones and all that. But it was like this week it really was the spread. It was like McDonald has three, Hayward's got two, but Heaney's in the center mid, and Heaney's on absolutely, I mean, the sun is jealous of him. That's how on fire Isaac Heaney has been. I saw the coaches' votes. He's got like a 23 or 24 point vote lead in the coaches' votes. It's ridiculous how good Isaac Heaney's been playing. And Nick Blakey had like a season best 32 disposals in this game. And I mean, I had to kind of he started in that in the back pocket, and it's like, but he played more of the game on the halfback line. So I almost didn't get him in because of the fact that he was on the more on the halfback line, but he did start as a fullback and did play down that back line. So I was because he had a heck of a game. Like it was literally their entire halfback line. What was it? Ollie Florent has 30. Nick Blakey has 32. Jake Lloyd went for 30 as well. Cause I know I was going back and forth, and I play fantasy football with some friends of mine, and I was playing the Yank on the Footy out of Ohio. And we went into the last game, and he had like a 100-point lead. And I'm like, He's like, you're probably gonna win this. You've got three guys going. I'm like, I'm not sure because he had, and Jake Lloyd goes bunta and goes for like 126. And I was like, I literally won that game by like 4 points. I messaged him later, and I'm like, I don't know how I did it because Jarman Impey was one of my Jarman Impey, and I can't remember. I think it was James Warple, maybe. No, it was. Trying to think who else was. Oh no, it was Logan McDonald. And I was like, so I had to have Logan McDonald and Jarman Impey at least even up. It was absolutely mental. Like I was watching, I think, going, holy, he's gonna win this. And there's like literally like Jarman Impey got a kick with like 2 seconds left, and that's when he the game was it was mental. So sorry, Yank on the Footy, if you're listening to this, I'm not celebrating that one. That was I pulled that one. That was the Stephen Bradbury of wins for sure. Absolutely on that one. So all right, we'll go to the power rankings for the AFL again. As I tell everybody, I do the last five games, so there may be some names sometimes that pop in here. This one kind of went pretty standard on this one. At five, the Port Adelaide Power. Number four, the Melbourne Demons. Number three, the GWS Giants. Two, the Sydney Swans. And number one, the Geelong Cats on that one. Carlton is right there. Unfortunately, that loss to Geelong kind of put them a little bit back a little bit, but that's the top five for now. Again, really early in the season. We're only seven games in. So again, I don't put a ton of stock into that one. So we'll get to it. The part that I always look forward to, we still have a couple of days to the first game, still some selection things, but we got to do it. We got to tip. This is going to be an insane round. I agree with you. I think this could be a tipping from hell round. So let's start off with it. The showdown, the underrated rivalry in the AFL, Adelaide v Port Adelaide. Who do you like in this one?
With no degree of certainty, I am going with Adelaide Crows for this one. I think the Crows will win out and go two in a row.
This is one of those that it's always, I always look at it and I go, okay, who's the underdog? Because it seems like the underdog finds a way to win this game. The Crows are the betting underdog, the tipping underdog, looking at my thing is Adelaide. I'm going to tip the Crows only because as I said on Twitter, the fact you lose Rosie, Allaire, and Pal Pepe in one foul swoop. The Crows have injuries. I agree with what one of the Crows fans goes, well, what about this for the Crows? I said, yeah, but most of those guys have been out for 2, 3, or 4 weeks before this. So the Crows have already had to deal with that issue previously. Port Adelaide hasn't. Port Adelaide has not had to deal with this because Rosie, Allaire, and Pal Pepper went down this week. So they've only got 4 or 5 days to make up their minds what they're going to do. And Rosie, I think, is a big loss. Yes, you have Butters. Yes, you have Johan Francis. Yes, you have Willem Drew. But Rosie is that little tiny bit of flair in that midfield to that group. That's going to be a loss. And I think if Dawson and Laird can find a way to get going into the center mids, I like Riley O'Brien in the ruck battle. I think that's going to give it issues. And again, this Port defense has not been tested to really tell, have they gelled as a group? And you lose Allaire in this round. I think this is a fun one. I'm going to tip the Crows in this one, but this is a cracker on Thursday night. Cannot wait for this. We move to Friday night. Friday night footy, absolute belting game. The old rivalry, Blues, Pies. I will tip first. I'm going to tip the Blues. I think they're center mids. I think the fact that Jordan Dugowie could be underdone or not even playing, I think could hurt them. I like what the Blues can do. I think they can bash up. I think Darcy Moore now has to make a decision. And I think whoever Darcy Moore doesn't could get off the chain. I don't think Frampton's going to be able to go up with Harry and Mackay. And I think Curnow can bully. I think this is going to be a fun one. Can they get their small forwards going? If they can get their small forwards going, this could be a very dangerous side. Tipping the Blues in this one. But another one, I think this comes down to late in the fourth quarter. And the Blues have been pretty good this year in close games.
I agree with everything you've said. Blues, though, my margin's a bit different. I've got Blues by 4 goals. I think the Blues here will hear the Voss revel that he gave them after the Geelong game, and I think you'll see a very transitional, efficient Blues looking to punish Collingwood, and the Blues will prevail.
It'll be a fun one. All right. The Battle of the Bridge, which is not, it is the Sydney Derby. I mean, I know a few of my Swans and GWS fans that still go, what bridge are you talking about? Which has always been kind of funny. So Swans, Giants, SCG. The last time they were there, the Giants stole one at the death as Toby Green snapped one from the boundary. Who do you like in this one?
Out of them past the Swans. I think the Swans win this one. And I'm going to go out on a limb. I think this will be quite a 5-goal win. I think Sydney will really show their might.
This one I think could get spicy because I know Sam Taylor come out and called this one smug, which I found interesting, very, very interesting. I had to chuckle at that a little bit. The spice is already there, and so it's going to be a fun one. Normally, I do the reverse psychology in this one, and I tip GWS, but I'm going to tip the Swans. I like what they're doing. Sam Taylor coming back from the injury, is he going to be fully 100%? Canelio potentially, do they take the risk and put both of those in this game? Because I'm not sure if it's a smart idea to put in freshly coming off injury players in a game that's going to be potentially, if the Swans do what they do, a very high pressure, high tackling game for the Swans. I'm going to tip Sydney in this one. Again, I think it comes down to late in the fourth quarter. I think the Swans finally get over that little hump of not being able to win a close game against the Giants. So I think Sydney in this one, but it is going to be a cracker at the SCG. I hope that the red and white show out at the SCG for sure. We jump to probably the least entertaining game of the round, and that is St. Kilda v. North. Does St. Kilda fill their boots? I sure hope so because they should. But if they don't, do questions start to go on the Saints? Are the Saints winning this one? Can the Grues make it competitive? Is my biggest question on this one. What do you like? And how do you like this? Who do you like in this one?
I think it's a really intriguing game because if I was Clarko, this is probably the best team outside of Hawthorn and probably Richmond to play. Because St Kilda at the moment, what they've proved is they make the game ugly. They slow it down. They're not utilizing that beautiful outside run. So that's advantage North Melbourne, I think. I feel like it's advantage North Melbourne because that's probably what they do to a good side. I do think though St Kilda should have too much. Like if St Kilda slip up here, it's game over, I think. So, but I'm expecting St Kilda, for my wife's sake, to win this one by 10 goals.
I love that. You got to make sure that the partner gets her plaudits for sure. All right, we jump to the MCG in an absolute classic, in a round of classics, as the Melbourne Demons host the Geelong Cats at the G. Who do you like in this one? Because this is an absolute banger for Saturday night footy.
So tough this one because this one is a flip of the coin. It's probably the first one that we've got a real flip of the coin. Yeah, I'm tipping Melbourne purely on what I've observed. Rhys Stanley seems to get battered everywhere he goes at the moment, and you're going against Max Gawn, and that midfield is potent. And the one thing I'll give Melbourne over Carlton, they're not wasteful. They have been there and done it. They're not going to be overawed. So I think the last couple of weeks might have taken it out of Geelong. Old legs, no danger field to burst out. I think Melbourne win that one just.
See, I'm gonna go the other way. I'm gonna tip the Cats because I think Tom Stewart might be back, which will really help defensively. I will somewhat go against you on this one. I think Melbourne can be wasteful. They're not always the most accurate team going forward, and that's also because a lot of their entries sometimes are too much bombing. And if Tom Stewart is back, and even Zach Guthrie, they're really good at intercept marking. And I'm not sure defensively if Melbourne can keep up with the speed and pace that Geelong has with their small forwards and their kind of wing players. I like the Cats in this one. I don't Lever cannot go with Jeremy Cameron. That's not what he wants to do, which makes that a matchup nightmare. You can put May on Hawkins and then it becomes a heavyweight wrestling match, which is always funny to me. But it's what defenders, who does Jared McVie, who do Howes and McVie and some of these smaller players and Rivers, who do they take? Because if they try to push up the field too much, they can get beaten out the back with Stengel and Close and some of the speed that Geelong has. I think this is a bad matchup unless Melbourne can really win the center clearances dominantly and then not kick to disadvantage or kick to defensive intercept possessions. Geelong may get toweled up in the midfield in this one. Like I honestly, with no danger field, you've got Bruin, you've got Bowes, you've got some of the young midfielders against the bulls that are Clayton Oliver and Petrarca and Viney. Like I said, Viney's built like a brick shit house. The thing though that I look at it like this is that can Melbourne be accurate going to their forwards? If they are, they're in it. If they aren't, Geelong is going to tear them up with their run, with their runoff halfback. Like, that's how I see it. And Melbourne has not convinced me that they're hitting targets consistently to do that. That's why I'll tip the Cats. But again, this is going to be an absolute classic. Cannot wait for this one. I may even get up at 5:30 in the morning for that one, because that one is going to be an absolute rip snorting game, or is the old WWE announcer, an absolute slobber knocker for sure. So we jump out to an equally intriguing game, as I'm anticipating Harley Reid return for the West Coast Eagles as they take on the Bombers coming off that draw. I'm going to tip the Eagles in this one. And some people are like, what are you doing, coach? They burned you last week. Harley Reid is back. And for some weird reason, West Coast, they play really well at home. The Bombers have to travel all the way out west. They're coming off a little bit of a disappointing result against the Pies, not getting the 4 points. I think potentially you could see a letdown. You see a strong Harley Reid come back from a week off, and a young body with that much more energy could be even better. I think they're feeding off Harley Reid mania, and I think it continues. I like the West Coast Eagles in this one.
This is a tough one because I agree 100% with your synopsis. This game has like 8 out of 9. You'll look back at this game when you get your tips and you'll be like, why did I choose the other side? This is the one 90% of people are going to get wrong when they have 8 and 9. I'm going Essendon purely recent form. Do you know what I mean? They should feel good. Two wins and a draw against the reigning premiers. Something's happening at Essendon, and I don't know if it's good or bad. It's kind of like having a real heavy curry, and you get that rumbling in your tummy. And you don't know if it's a full rumbling or you're going to be on the toilet for the rest of the night. So I'm hoping I'm full and I'm sustained. Essendon win that one.
That one's going to be, again, in the fact that both that and the Geelong game are at the same time. Like, if I could double screen, I so would, because that's a fun one there for sure. An intriguing one at the G, like I said, as Richmond, as the heavily limping Richmond Tigers take on a Fremantle Dockers team. Again, inconsistency and form, I'm fascinated. Who do you like in this one?
Oh, this game is like your brain tells you Fremantle, but then you see MCG and you see the Tigers, and you're like, you remember Dusty 2017, the Fortress, and it's really hard to tip against it. But no Taranto, Hopper's done his hamstring again, Lynch many weeks away. Surely Fremantle here. Surely.
You would hope so. I'm gonna tip the Dockers in this one, but this just screams to me upset. This just screams Dockers on the road. They for some weird reason they go east and they forget how to play good football. Richmond is a pesky side. They hang around some teams that let if they're let to hang around, they can be quite the pain in the rear end. They're the mosquito football team this year that you can swat them easily and destroy them, but if you miss them, they can just annoy the living crap out of you. So, Fremantle for me, but this one I think is a little bit closer. I think Fremantle Dockers fans are going to be a little concerned with that one if it goes the way I think it potentially could go. Another one, two headache teams, two teams that annoy the crap out of me this year, and that is the Western Bulldogs at Marvel Stadium hosting the Hawthorn Hawks. I'm going to tip the doggies in this one only because the firepower on the doggies is enough to get them over. But neither of these teams are convincing to me right now. Neither team am I going, I really want to watch these two, because they're annoying as all get out. Because the Western Bulldogs can't make up their mind if they're good or bad. And Hawthorn are bad, but they showed last year they can be good. So I was expecting a little bit more progression. So who do you like in this one?
This is one of them games. This is the Marvel. Like that's the only place Hawthorn have won this year. So I know it's one game, but you can say they've got some happy memories there. But then you look at the Doggies, it's their home ground. They're comfortable there. Has to be the Doggies. But I'm with you. Like I can imagine I watch this back next week, and my gut tells me Dustin Martin thinks it's 2017 and kicks Richmond to an unlikely win. And this game here, I can see a Sam Mitchell spray. And out of nowhere, Jai Newcombe goes full Incredible Hulk and they win at the death. So, but I'm tipping the doggies. with no confidence.
Yeah,
No
this is,
confidence.
you are literally not the only one. And last but not least, I think the Q clash of epic proportion to end the round. Brisbane Lions at the Gabba host the Gold Coast Suns. Who do you like in this one?
Sometimes you go against your better judgment, and everything is telling me Brisbane win this. But I think last week has broken Brisbane, and I just don't think Brisbane are that side that bounces back. I think Gold Coast will be looking. Do you know what I mean? They had a fantastic win last week, which was, I thought, laden with risk. They've destroyed Hawthorn. They lost to Sydney, but that's no shame. I think that I think I've got a feeling Gold Coast win this. I don't know why. I think the tides are changing in Queensland, and there's a new kid on town, Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm gonna tip the Lions in this one only because again, they, I'm going off of previous situations where that usually the Gabba is a fortress. And usually, I say that again because unfortunately the Lions have already lost a few. But I just the Gold Coast not at People's Bank or whatever the heck they're calling it this year. They go on the road and there's a little bit taken out of them. So I'm gonna lean on that a little bit again. I would zero confidence on this because I'm with you. I'm like, Gold Coast has got my fancy. They're pulling my ear towards them and I'm starting to lean a little bit more on this. I'm gonna tip the Lions in this one, but zero confidence. Like this is the one clearly I'm tipping, but I'm in the back of my mind, I'm going, I wish I could tip Gold Coast because I think it really is going to be a clash. Again, there is not a the only, like I said, the only game that I'm sitting here almost 100% certainty is St. Kilda. And even in the back of my head, I'm going, this is the perfect game for St. Kilda to absolutely lose its, you know what, and fall apart and have North win it. So a very, very intriguing round. So, Palmy, that is it. That is all 9 games tipped. We are mere hours away from the first game of the next round. I cannot wait. Round 8, the season just goes by so quickly and so much fun. In fact, there's my alarm to get ready for work. So, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I love when that happens. Forgot to turn that off. Sorry. Live podcasting. I apologize. But Palmy, thank you so much for hopping on. It's always great to have you on the podcast. If you want to give a shout out to the YouTube channel and what's going on for your coverage of not only footy, but the Blues.
Yeah, we've got loads coming up. We've got the preview, obviously, of Carlton Collingwood. So that may be up before this is up. So I may be talking past tense through the magic of science. But loads going on, loads of drafts. So if you are into your draft, we'll have full coverage of the mid-season draft. If you're not a Carlton fan, that's for the whole competition. And also the AFL draft as well. We're really ramping up that content earlier than normal. So yeah, come and say hi. We're a friendly bunch. There's more swearing than there is on this show. I've been really well behaved. So if you like a cheeky swear word, come on down.
Well, I tell most people that you can drop the 4-letter word and I'm not going to complain about it. And my producer doesn't beep it out or anything like that because I've said it numerous times on many podcasts and sometimes it gets monotonous. I love the natural ability to just drop a 4-letter word without having to worry about being pulled by the ear by somebody going, you can't do that. You can't. No, I don't care. We're going to do it. I don't give two flying shits. I really don't care. So this is so much fun. I absolutely love it. Palmy, again, your work is fantastic. I love everything that you guys do over there. Again, I may not be a Blues fan, but I respect and love people that love the game of football and love their club with a passion and are able to do what they do. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for this episode of Dynasty Disposals. Keep an eye out. We have sample and waffle episodes reviewing the last rounds of play, the footy over in South Australia. And WA has been getting better and better. I am thoroughly enjoying it. Both the women's and men's comps are getting into the thick of their seasons. So keep an eye on that very, very soon. That'll do it for us. We'll be back again with more footy coverage in your ears very, very soon.